Welcome to FinSight, the Global Financial Institutions Sector Podcast. My name is Richard Powell, and I'm the Global Knowledge Lead for Baker McKenzie's Financial Institutions Group, based in London. On this podcast, we'll be discussing the risks posed by cyber attacks for financial institutions and how they can manage and mitigate them. In January 2025, Baker McKenzie released this year's edition of our Global Disputes Forecast, sharing survey data compiled by interviewing 600 senior in-house litigation lawyers. This revealed that cybersecurity and data privacy disputes remain the top risk factors for businesses this year due to the increasing sophistication of cyber attacks and stricter regulatory requirements. My colleagues joining me today to discuss cybersecurity are Jessica Knoll and Liz Roper. Jessica and Liz, would you introduce yourselves, please?
Sure. So great to be here, Richard. Thank you. I'm Jess Knoll. I'm joining from Baker's offices here in the San Francisco Bay Area, the cradle of tech innovation, we like to call it. A large part of my practice involves helping out corporate officers and directors and the financial space as well, and in all sorts of technology-related matters, litigation, government investigations, corporate investigations. And I focus a lot, quite a bit, on AI and cybersecurity. Those are my subspecialties, and how global issues will play into those risks. So I'm really looking forward to diving into the topic with you guys today.
Yeah, and thank you, Richard. It's great to be here with you and with Jess. I'm Liz Roper, a partner in Baker's Global Dispute Resolution Practice based in New York. And I advise clients on cybersecurity compliance, on cybersecurity incident response, as well as government investigations and internal investigations. Previously, I spent about 15 years as a prosecutor at the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, including about 4 years as the chief of the Cybercrime and Identity Theft Bureau.
Many thanks for those introductions. As said, cyber risk is a top issue for financial institutions, remembering they are data-rich businesses where protecting customer data is paramount. And unsurprisingly, the sector is one of the most heavily targeted for cyber attacks, reportedly being the recipient of one in every four such attacks in recent years. Banks and expansive structures increase the areas exposed to attack. So in this podcast, we're going to focus on four themes: the geopolitical context, fomenting and facilitating cyber attacks, dependency on and the vulnerability to third, fourth parties, and so on, the impact of new technologies, and the increasingly complex regulatory environment. So to take the first of these, the geopolitical context, would you, Jess, like to speak about this?
I would. I think this is actually really timely, given recent events on the world stage involving our lovely country, the United States. It seems like these kind of world events, the geopolitical chaos and change, would be separate from cyber attacks, but actually they're very linked, especially when it comes to financial institutions. Whenever things get really tense globally, or there are shifts or conflicts between geopolitical states, hackers get busier. And we see more cyber attacks hitting financial companies, and the attacks themselves get smarter and more complex. And usually the attackers are not just random criminals. They're tied to governments and groups that are involved in whatever the conflict is that's happening on the world stage. So think back to the invasion of Ukraine in 2022. We saw a spike related to that in cyber attacks on Western financial institutions. And why would hackers choose banks as one of their targets? Well, it's just like you said, Richard. It's they're data rich institutions, and essentially hitting the financial system is really a shortcut to an attempt by the threat actors to disrupt any economies or grab sensitive financial information or make everybody just even more nervous about their assets and funds. And sometimes it is, clearly nation state funded attackers that are trying to spy or actually steal funds or just cause trouble for their rivals. So there's a very big target gets painted on financial institutions during times of disruption like we're going through now.
Thanks. And how do you think, Jessica, the sector should be mitigating the risk?
Well, it's really a tough question. I think it's one, a difficulty we're going to be revisiting quite a bit during our discussion today. But there are things that the financial sector can do to defend itself. We need to be a little more creative in this area than ever. We need to be one step ahead because it's getting harder to get cyber insurers, carriers to cover these nation state attacks just because they're getting so costly and so tricky. So what it comes down to are a couple of key proactive actions that financial institutions can consider. First of all, spending the money and the time and the attention on boosting your own cybersecurity defenses. That's really important. We can't let that lapse at all, not for 1 minute. And secondly, because these are cross-border threats and they can really hit the whole system, where regulations are going to be different between different geopolitical areas and countries, you need to work closely with international partners, make sure you're informed by good counsel, and building a united front in coming up with a response, a cross-functional response. And thinking through the why, that's really an important thing to pause on for a minute. What are some of the motives, the geopolitical motives behind these attacks and the nation state attacks? And thinking ahead to that, really being and to be able to anticipate what might be coming. And so that brings us to sort of the practical point, which is the reverse scenario analysis, they call it. And we've been talking about and pushing the idea of doing tabletop exercises in cybersecurity preparedness for a long time. And that continues to be one of the best ways to, as a practical matter, to make sure that your defenses are adequate and that your systems are adequate and your governance, your cyber governance is in place in the right ways. So think of it like financial wargaming. You know, think about the crisis that could be brewing, the worst thing that could happen, a major system outage, a war. Think about the assets that you might hold, the customers you do business with, and then work backwards from that to think about how geopolitical cyber attacks could realistically cause harm in that system. So that can really, doing those kind of war games and tabletop exercises and that kind of proactive thinking can really help you increase your resilience before something happens.
Thank you. Liz, I'd now like to move on to our second theme, the dependency of financial institutions on and their vulnerability to third and fourth parties. Would you like to speak to this, please?
Yes, absolutely. This is an area that is relevant across sectors, but is particularly relevant, I think, to financial institutions. And we get asked about these risks by our financial sector clients all the time. In fact, we're finishing up a matter right now in which risk was introduced by a vendor breach for a financial services provider. So as we know, the financial sector today is very reliant on third and fourth parties down the supply chain, vendors, service providers, subcontractors, to provide a wide range of services. And these dependencies can be really beneficial for operational efficiency and cost effectiveness. And I think that's, you know, increasingly true, particularly around AI tools and providers of AI-enabled services, which I know Jess is going to touch on later in our discussion. But it also introduces significant risk from a cybersecurity perspective, because you just don't have the level of visibility and control into a vendor's risk management program as you do into your own. So because third-party vendors often have access to really sensitive data and critical systems, particularly when they're servicing financial sector clients, they're very attractive targets for cyber criminals because they sometimes don't have the same robust defenses that a financial sector institution might. The complexity of these relationships can also create vulnerabilities that can be difficult to manage. So for instance, a breach in a third-party vendor system can provide a gateway for attackers to infiltrate the financial institution's own network, depending on how the relationship is configured. And then further down the chain, what we would call fourth parties, so the vendors of the vendors, the fourth party to the third party vendor, add yet another layer of complexity and risk. Financial institutions may not have really any oversight or control over these fourth parties, which makes it even more challenging to ensure robust cybersecurity practices are in place throughout that supply chain. So this lack of visibility, which gets compounded the deeper into the supply chain you get, can really lead to gaps in security, which increases your overall exposure to cyber threats as, you know, as the supply chain gets more diffuse.
Thank you. So how should financial institutions respond in that case?
Well, I'll pick up on a theme that Jess touched on and say that it can also be really helpful to engage in a specific tabletop or kind of proactive exercise around third-party risk. So where you test your planning and response protocols around an incident that impacts a vendor. In addition, you know, it's obviously important to implement a really robust, comprehensive third-party risk management program. And for our financial sector clients, that's going to be something that regulators expect to see anyway. That will include conducting thorough due diligence, continuous monitoring of the vendors, and establishing clear security requirements for all third and fourth parties. So giving thought to what certifications are required and things like that. And by proactively managing those relationships, you can better protect yourselves against the sort of cascading or domino effects of cyber attacks that originate from within your network of vendors and partners.
Thanks. So turning now to our third theme, the impact of new technologies. The growing power of artificial intelligence comes immediately to mind. While offering financial institutions cost savings and efficiencies, as well as new products, it also threatens to increase the risk of cyber attacks. Jessica, would you speak to this?
Sure, I'd love to. AI is definitely an area I spend a lot of time studying and using and trying to understand. And it's 100% true that AI, especially generative AI, is transforming finance and tech and pretty much every sector. And it offers huge benefits, but also massively boosts the risks of cyber attacks. So we've seen really significant leaps in AI capabilities just in the first quarter of this year in 2025. And based on what they call the scaling laws, that the progress in that area is just going to keep accelerating on an exponential level. And this means we're going to be seeing dramatically increased capabilities on the threat side as well. And that's going to happen fast. It's already happening now. So threat actors are using advanced AI tools for things like hyper-realistic phishing scams. And, you know, those misspelled emails of years past are a thing of the on the dustbin of history, because now it's becoming almost impossible to tell the difference between, you know, a true inquiry and a malware one. And we're seeing just a dramatic increase in how fast and cheap and easy it is to launch sophisticated cyber attacks. So that, of course, the industry on the defensive side is racing to use the new AI tools to defend that. So it's a constant back and forth in the war. So back to one of the first points I made earlier, which is that you really need to stay on top of the tools and the investment that's needed to be able to fight the cyber war. And so the escalating AI risk really piles up on top of existing vulnerabilities like the move to the cloud, which most sectors have done or are in the midst of doing. And again, the use of those third and fourth party vendors that Liz was just talking about, they really give, you know, they increase the attack surface and they give threat actors more potential entry points into being able to steal the data. And that's where quantum computing comes in. So we've got AI to be concerned about. We've seen rapid improvement in that area. We've also seen in the first quarter of this year rapid progress in quantum computing, which is a whole new way of processing data, much, much faster, more sophisticated. We've seen new quantum processors being unveiled, a quantum chipset from Microsoft as well. And so even though those are still developing, those are going to be pushing performance boundaries beyond anything we've seen or can even think of at the moment. The risk is relevant now because this is something where the current hashing, the current encryption that we're using across the board is simply not going to be strong enough when those new technologies race forward to their expected capabilities, even in the next year or two. It may already be the case now in jurisdictions that we don't have peer visibility into. They may already have it. So what we need to be thinking about is the possibility that threat actors could steal data now that is encrypted and be able to decrypt it later. So regulators are already ahead of this and advising firms in the financial sector to really start thinking about their quantum vulnerabilities now and planning for longer term data protection. And so thinking about these future risks or this quickly, rapidly approaching risk now when dealing with the present day data security slate of concerns that we all have.
Well, stopping future risks sounds like a tall order, but practically what steps should management take?
Well, it really is a challenge, as I've alluded to. So everybody who feels a little bit overwhelmed, there's a reason for that. But there are practical steps that management can be taking and should be taking now, especially regarding quantum, the quantum computing threat that we just were talking about. A key thing to watch is something that's emerging just this year in 2025. The National Institute of Standards and Technology in the U.S., NIST, is in the midst of finalizing and publishing the first official standards for post-quantum encryption. So talking about giving some guidance on how do we fix that encryption now so that the steal now and decrypt later is less of a threat. The standards are really helpful. They're a big deal. And they'll essentially give you that technological roadmap for upgrading that encryption so that you can withstand attacks using quantum computers. And so really important to monitor the NIST developments and start planning ahead. And then beyond that specific standard, it's also just about building that forward-looking vigilance within the organization, scanning the horizon for what's coming next, understanding what's happening in AI and what the capability increases are, and trying to develop strategies before those risks emerge as exigent, urgent problems.
Well, thank you. And now turning to our fourth and final theme, driven by the need to protect sensitive financial data and maintain trust in the financial system, the regulatory landscape for cybersecurity is becoming increasingly complex, as we've discussed. Disclosure and reporting obligations for not only cyber attacks, but also cybersecurity readiness and governance are becoming ever stricter. Liz, what's your view on this question?
Yeah, thank you. Well, financial institution entities are obviously no stranger to regulatory oversight, right? But it has become an increasingly complex environment on the global scale as it relates to cybersecurity, especially for these particular clients. So I think historically we thought of regulation in the cybersecurity space as being kind of driven by privacy concerns. So of course you have the GDPR. In the US, we have, you know, each state has different rules around notice obligations that are really triggered by access to personal data. But increasingly, we're seeing regulators take aim at cybersecurity programs more specifically, regardless of, of sort of privacy implications, and also, of course, at institutions' use of AI technology, as Jess was just touching on. So it really is a complex environment, and it's one that presents really a heightened risk. So, for example, in the U.S., here in New York, in my home state, our Department of Financial Services, which is sort of the, you know, the main financial regulator here in New York, has a cybersecurity regulation that sets rigorous standards for financial institutions operating in New York, which is most of them. It was first enacted back in 2017, so quite early. And this regulation requires financial institutions to implement a comprehensive cybersecurity program. Recent amendments to the regulation have a host of new requirements, particularly for larger institutions, and requires yearly risk assessments and reporting on certain cybersecurity events, as well as reporting on things like when the institution pays a ransom in connection with a ransomware attack. So this regulation has really become a model across the US, and many institutions sort of map their compliance program to this regulation because it is so robust and really reflects the growing emphasis on strong cybersecurity programs. It also includes rules around governance of cyber risk, so requires regular reporting to executive management and to the board by the security organization within the financial institution, which is something that's new, but increasingly is going to be expected, I think, by regulators globally. We also here in the U.S. have the U.S. Cyber Incident Reporting for Critical Infrastructure Act of 2022, or CERCIA, which will require companies in critical sectors, of course, including financial institutions, to report, again, not only security breaches, but also ransom payments that they may have made. So the regulators are really kind of taking aim at ransomware and trying to understand more about when and why ransomware victims might pay ransoms. So it really requires institutions to be thoughtful about that and to kind of document their protocols and playbooks for how they make those decisions around, that difficult decision of whether to pay a ransom. And in Europe, besides the GDPR that mandates strict data protection measures and also reporting on relatively short timelines, there are certain cyber-specific frameworks that we've seen more recently, like the EU's NIS2, the Network and Information Security Directive, which builds on the first NIS. And has a host of cybersecurity-specific requirements, as well as the Cyber Resilience Act, the EU's Digital Operational Resilience Act, or DORA, which applies to financial institutions. And these all require rigorous security measures, as well as prompt reporting of breaches. So it's fair to say that this proliferation and sometimes disharmony of regulation is creating significant challenges for organizations. With a sort of mosaic of regulations across different jurisdictions that really affect their ability to maintain consistent compliance. So it's important to understand what your regulatory obligations are on a global level and, you know, ensure that you're sort of mapping your program to the right regulations. This involves continuous monitoring of regulatory changes, investing in advanced cybersecurity detection and prevention technologies, and of course, fostering a culture of compliance within the organization. We've increasingly seen regulators take action against organizations that lack that culture of compliance and where things like cyber breaches might be handled improperly or even covered up. That's increasingly going to be the subject of a very strict regulatory enforcement. It's also important to, as we said, carry out risk assessments against key jurisdictions, including assessing your notification obligations, as well as contractual obligations across different jurisdictions and making sure you really understand what those are everywhere where the business is operating. Collaboration with regulators can be important, as well as with industry peers, to share best practices and stay ahead of emerging threats. It's essential for leadership to really prioritize compliance in this way and protect operations and maintain customer trust, which is obviously, you know, one of the most important sort of aspects of the business. And last but not least, at the heart of any successful cyber resilience strategy is the CISO, the Chief Information Security Officer, who balances technology, business needs, and increasingly legal compliance. So whereas this was a role that historically may have been strictly in the technology organization, the CISO is now increasingly reporting to the board, reporting to executive management, and really interacting with the legal team to ensure that the cybersecurity program is compliant from a legal point of view.
Many thanks. That's really interesting. So now we've considered these four themes. I'd mentioned that according to the World Economic Forum, some 35% of small organizations believe their cyber resilience is inadequate, a proportion that has increased sevenfold since 2022, albeit larger organizations are faring better.
Yeah, I think that's accurate to say. I mean, I do think that there's some amount of preparedness that we, some amount of concern that we all should have, right? Even if you think you're doing all right, you may be doing less well than you think. The cyber threat landscape for financial institutions, as we've talked about today, is really incredibly dynamic and challenging. And defense really depends on comprehensive preparation on all the points that we've covered today. And that means clarity on legal responsibilities, proactive cyber controls, continuous training for staff, and critically, being ready in case an attack does get through. And that readiness includes not just the technical incident response plan, which hopefully you will have gone through a tabletop or two, or do it periodically so you make sure that you're ready from a practical perspective, but you also need to have that strategic preparedness for all the consequences and the possibilities of what might be coming. And that includes the potential for disputes and even litigation that might flow from a cyber attack.
Many thanks, Jessica. Well, so a lot there to consider. And well, thanks again to Jessica and Liz for talking to us today and unpacking this topic, which, as we've said, is so high in the financial sector's priorities. Well, if you'd like to know more about this topic, you can read our article published by the World Economic Forum on how chief information security officers can mitigate cyber risks. And you may be interested to read our year ahead publication for 2025, What's on the Radar for Financial Institutions, to be found on BakerMcKenzie.com. This provides an overview of the challenges facing the sector and updates our risk radars on fintech and digital transformation, sustainability and regulatory scrutiny that describe the trends, developments and associated risks affecting financial services. Well, we hope that you have found this podcast useful. As always, please do reach out to your usual Baker McKenzie contact or any of today's speakers if there are any specific areas or projects you would like to talk through. We are always more than happy to help where we can. Thanks again to everyone for listening, and we hope you can join Baker McKenzie for the next episode of FinSight.